Pesach edition of Havra with Shoshana. We're going to begin by going over the full definition of leavening. I have come across some material from Carmen Welker of therefinersfire.org, and I'm going to share it with you. The Feast of Unleavened Bread is meant as a reminder to us of the Israelites' redemption from the bondage of Egypt and of our redemption from sin through Mashiach Yeshua. Yehovah's word tells us that during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, we have to spend a week without leaven in our lives. This feast, which immediately follows Passover, is observed in the springtime and lasts for 7 days. It's pretty important. Yehovah gave us very specific instructions to remember this feast and observe it perpetually. Exodus 13:3. Remember this day on which you left Egypt, the abode of slavery, because Yehovah, by the strength of his hand, has brought you out of this place. Do not eat chametz. But continuing to verse 10 of Exodus 13. Therefore you are to observe this regulation at its proper time, year after year. Unfortunately, some Bibles have mistranslated the whole idea about what Yehovah was referring to, specifically the exchange of the Hebrew word chametz, or to leaven, or yeast. For instance, the NIV reads, Exodus 12:18. In the first month you are to eat bread made without yeast from the evening on the 14th day until the evening of the 21st day. For 7 days no yeast is to be found in your houses, and whoever eats anything with yeast in it must be cut off from the community of Israel, whether he's alien or native born. Eat nothing made with yeast. Wherever you live, you must eat unleavened bread. Notice the word yeast appears over and over again where it should read chametz. The complete Jewish Bible more properly reads, Exodus 12:18, from the evening of the 14th day of the first month until the evening of the 21st day, you are to eat matzah. During these 7 days, no leaven is to be found in your homes. Whoever eats food with chametz in it is to be cut off from the community of Israel. It doesn't matter whether he is a foreigner or a citizen of the land. Eat nothing with chametz in it. Wherever you live, eat matzah. It is truly a shame that we must communicate with each other in a language other than Hebrew to study the scripture, because the meaning of the words as they were translated from Hebrew to Greek and then to modern language and then to our understanding of the meaning of the word as it is used today, as you can imagine, can cause serious interpretation problems. We'll address in a moment the meaning of the word chametz, which is often translated into English as leaven, even in the citation from Stearns, as in the Complete Jewish. But for the moment, let's discuss the word yeast. By our modern understanding of the word yeast, the picture that comes to mind is that of a little foil bag of yellowish powder called Fleischmann's yeast, which we blend into our dough, toss into the oven, and presto, we have bread. Because this is all we are familiar with in these our times, we miss the meaning in these scriptures, and we can blame the various Bible translations which, over the centuries, have caused enormous problems with our understanding. Let's look, for example, at a description of the Jewish observance of Passover. During Passover, Jews refrain from eating chametz, which is anything that contains barley, wheat, rye, oats, and spelt, a kind of wheat, and is cooked within 18 minutes after coming in contact with water. No leavening is allowed. This signifies the fact that the Hebrews had no time to let their bread rise as they made a hurried escape from Egypt. An example of the rabbinic interpretation that totally destroys the idea that no chametz is to be found in our homes can be found in Michael Morrison's Passover Feast Without the Yeast. Jews of different backgrounds do not observe all the same rules. Ashkenazi Jews who come from Europe, most Jews in America, also avoid corn, rice, peanuts, legumes, as they are also used to make bread and may have other grains mixed in. These items are known as ketanot. Rules and guidelines may be extremely stringent. Not only must Orthodox Jews not eat these items, but they must also completely remove them and any food that has come in contact with them from their homes. They may throw them away, burn them, or sell them to a non-Jew, though they are allowed to buy them back at the end of Passover. Some go through amazingly thorough and labor-intensive cleaning processes to rid their homes of any hint of chametz or kinyot. For example, sinks, refrigerators, ovens, and stoves must be scoured and then not used for at least 24 hours before the beginning of Passover. Specific Passover china must be used. Silverware must be heated to a glow and then cooled. Items are placed in a pot of boiling water, usually one at a time, because they must not touch each other during the process, then immediately submerged in cold water. Pots must be cleaned inside and out. To accomplish this, a pot must be filled with water and brought to a boil. Then, to clean the outside, a brick or rock is placed inside to cause the boiling water to flow over the sides. However, said rock must be hot because the water must still be boiling as it cascades over the sides. A cool rock would cool the water when it came into contact. Items which seem acceptable for Passover but may not be is baking soda. Most sodas contain corn syrup. Since eating corn is not allowed, soda containing corn syrup is also out. If the corn syrup is not used, sodas generally have additional flavorings which are not divulged and could be derived from grains. Only sodas produced under supervision of a rabbi or other certified agencies are acceptable. Frozen vegetables are produced on the same machinery that produces pasta or pasta vegetable blends. Since pasta is made from a grain and not allowed, neither are most frozen vegetables unless made under supervision. Raw vegetables, some fruits and vegetables, cucumbers for example, have wax coatings that may be made from soy proteins and oils derived from grains. Dried fruits that are often dried in ovens where bread is sometimes baked. Some have waxes, oils, and even traces of flour to prevent sticking. Marshmallows, completely not allowed unless made under supervision. They contain gelatin, which is made from the bones of potentially non-kosher animals. Milk. Unsuitable additives are often used. Chocolate milk is usually unacceptable because it could contain corn syrup or malt, which is made from grain. And these are just food items. Balloons and rubber gloves can have a powdered coating on them, which may be considered hemets. Even some bug traps use an oatmeal or wheat-based substance and must be removed from the premises. And let's not even get started on pet food. Okay, clearly there's something wrong here. Yehovah says no hemets is to be in your house. We'll find this in Exodus 12:19 and 13:7. And that you are not to eat food with hemets in it, found Exodus 12:20 and 13:3. The above orthodox rules tend to go overboard. And remember also in the NIV, Exodus 12:19 says, for 7 days no yeast is to be found in your houses. If that were really the case, then the NIV has just asked you to perform the impossible. For instance, stop listening and take a deep breath. You've just inhaled millions of yeast spores. Natural wild yeast is all around you, including in your homes. You can't avoid it, and you can't get rid of it. So what exactly is yeast, and what's the difference between yeast and hemets? We know that bakers use yeast to make the dough rise. Without it, our bread would be nothing but flat, hard cakes. Like what? Matzah! Just how do we comply with Yehovah's mitzvot? Let's look a little further. We don't know how or when the first leavened bread occurred, only that the first records of any sort of bread are in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs from around 5,000 years ago, which depict bakehouses with dough rising next to bread ovens. In ancient Egypt, wine making and brewing occurred alongside baking, and it's possible that some fermenting brew, a kind of liquid yeast known as barm, could have ended up in the bread dough, which then caused the dough to rise. No one knows exactly how it happened, but one good guess is that Yehovah simply told man how to make bread. Continuing on with the topic of yeast, the exact nature of yeast, where it comes from and what it is, remained a mystery for thousands of years. It took, in fact, the invention of the microscope in the early 17th century to finally allow scientists to see what a single-celled yeast looks like, and they soon realized that yeast cells multiply in a sugar solution, but they did not realize in that era that the cells were actually alive. A 19th century food chemist thought it was a decomposition of the cells that caused fermentation and refused to accept the theory that yeast was a living organism. It took Louis Pasteur to solve the mystery in 1859 when he discovered how yeast works. He established beyond doubt, using grapes, that it was the dust on the surface of the grape skin, which made wine ferment, that yeast was a living organism, and that the only active living cells can cause fermentation. Simply stated, the fermentation process in dough can be described as the breakdown of the starches in flour, producing carbon dioxide, which in turn expands the gluten protein in the flour and causes the dough to expand. A small amount of alcohol is also produced, but this burns off as the bread bakes. Bread makers understand this process. When you slice your bread, you can see tiny pockets, parts of holes. These holes are a result of carbon dioxide oozing through the wet dough, and when the dough was baked, it drove just enough of the moisture out to dry out the dough, driving out the carbon dioxide and killing the yeast. An interesting side note, in England, in 1468, in the Brewer's Book of Norwich, the name for barm was God is good, because it was made by the blessing of God. Thus, we now know yeast is a single-cell microorganism capable of reproducing itself. Scientists today classify yeast as a fungus. A yeast consists of a cell with walls composed of cellulose and an interior of living matter called protoplasm. You can feed it with a solution of sugar to make it grow, or it can be killed with heat. A yeast, therefore, is neither a plant nor an animal. Now here's the important connection. The ancients did not use yeast as we know it today. Since the days of ancient Egypt, 5,000 or more years ago, right up to the present, bakers have captured and used wild yeast to make bread. Remember your deep breath? The same stuff. And you can do this as well, right in your own kitchen. Here's how. Mix a cup of flour, whole wheat or white, with a cup of lukewarm water in a small jar and stir them together until they are smooth. Place the mixture on a shelf or a windowsill and leave it uncovered so the yeast will be able to find food. Now wait and watch it change over the next several days. Stir that mixture each day with a wooden spoon or stick. After a few days, it will start to smell a little sour and become sticky. The mixture is fermenting, which is another way of saying that it has attracted invisible wild yeast, which are feeding off the flour and water and changing everything in the process. Once it begins to ferment, place a cloth napkin or a piece of cheesecloth over the jar to keep it from drying out on top. After 5 to 10 days, depending on the place and temperature of the room, you will notice small bubbles in the mixture. This is that carbon dioxide, which is a byproduct of the reproduction of the yeast. Notice that the smell is more pleasant, almost like peaches. Give it another 5 days to build strength, stirring it daily and feeding it by adding a few tablespoons of flour and maybe a little water if it's too dry. Now, you have a cup of, guess what? Sourdough starter that you can add to bread dough to make it rise. You can store it in the refrigerator to keep it fresh and to slow down the fermentation process. After you have added it to the flour and water you use to make your bread dough, be sure to take a cupful out before adding any. We have just described hametz, not yeast. Yeast is the small microscopic organism, and it is an important part of the substance, but it is the mixture of sticky, pleasant-smelling stuff that as a whole is the substance you add to knead into dough to make the dough rise. This is hametz, or leaven. Hametz etymologically speaking, means hot and pressed, so that the most accurate translation in English should be hametz, or baked bread. But hametz, in reality, comes from a root which means to be sour. So where Yehovah says in Exodus 12:20 to eat nothing with hametz in it, it literally means the material from which the bread is made, as in the mixture. If you have the hametz, get rid of it. If you have baked bread, which has hametz in it, get rid of that. Do you get the point? Unless you understand the meaning of leaven or hametz, you won't be able to understand Yeshua's teachings. Yeshua told his disciples in Matthew 16:6, "So when Yeshua said to them, 'Watch out, guard yourselves against the hametz of the Pharisees and the Sadducees,' the Talmudim, or disciples, thought he was talking about bread, but he meant the leaven of the false teachings and the false doctrines," verses 8 through 12. But if you read the same verse from a translation called The Message, it says, in Matthew 16:5-6, "On their way to the other side of the lake, the disciples discovered they'd forgotten to bring along bread. In the meantime, Yeshua said to them, 'Keep a sharp eye out for the Pharisee Sadducee yeast.'" Huh? Wow, that has no meaning whatsoever. The original meaning of the scripture is totally lost. The Message translation has literally lost the message. This is why it's so important to read the Bible in its true context. Don't be led astray by man's ideas. Pray that Yehovah will reveal those words that cause misunderstanding and ask him to give you the desire to seek his true meaning. And be aware of the leaven that can take you from Yehovah. So let's summarize. The Torah commandments are, for Pesach, remove all hametz from one's home, Exodus 12:15. We're not to possess hametz in one's house or territory during Passover, Exodus 12:19, 13:7, and Deuteronomy 16:4. We are not to eat hametz during Passover, instead eat matzah, Exodus 12:18, 13:6, 12:20, and Deuteronomy 16:3. In all these mitzvot, the command is to simply remove baked bread and eat matzah in commemoration of the Exodus, not so much for the purpose of being strictly obedient of what to eat or not eat. Rather, it is the act of removing baked breads, not consuming baked breads with your meal, and spending the week of Pesach with Yehovah that is important. Regardless of whether or not you have leaven or yeast in the house, as long as you have rid your home of baked bread and do not consume baked bread during Pesach, you are acting in obedience to Torah. By baked bread, there are two considerations to evaluate. First, there's the obvious, the actual loaf of baked bread. Today, this is usually in a plastic bag and ready to eat. The other is the cake mix in a box on your pantry shelf. Though it is technically not baked bread, as it is not yet baked, It is most definitely the key ingredients ready to be turned into baked bread. I was very clear that these things qualify as well as they are leavening agents, Exodus 13:7. The difference is clearly that it is not all mixed up into hametz. Nevertheless, it seems clear that for all practical purposes, cake mixes and boxes are leavening agents. Eating our home of prepared baked bread in a bag certainly meets Yehovah's mitzvot, and in our household, we also get rid of cake mixes and boxes. You are certainly free to decide in your homes what to do to prepare your household for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But we don't need to get wrapped around the axle on definitions. Some will argue that yeast is a leavening agent as well, and that there are other leaven and leavening agents other than what's described above. Fact is that the terms leaven and yeast are relatively modern terms, so that there's a lot of room for argument. Though it is futile to rid your home of yeast, it is quite easy to rid your home of baked breads, cake mixes, bags of yeast, or cans of baking powder. All these things clearly fall in the essence of hametz or leaven. And finally, what about wine? Both bread making and wine making are a fermentation process. But they both ferment, don't they? Should we not rid our homes of wine as well? Some rabbis do insist that you must get rid of the wine in the house at Pesach, but this is why we must take care not to get rabbinical in our observance of Torah. Wine is not hametz. In the simplest comparison, bread making and wine making are the same. In bread making, the released gas is important to the rising of the dough, and the alcohol produced is evaporated in the baking process. In wine making, released gases are disposed of, and the produced alcohol is concentrated. Both, indeed, are a fermentation process. In both processes, yeast cells feed on sugar, producing both gas and alcohol. But wine is not baked, and it has not risen. After wine is filtered, any remaining yeast spores are dead, no fermentation continuing in bottled wine. Therefore, in my estimation, one does not need to remove wine from the house during Pesach. Since hametz is such a central portion of what celebrating Passover is all about, this we have gone over the complete definition of it, so there's no room for error. I know there's a lot of people that really question what needs to go and what needs to stay. And in the next airing, we're going to go over the Passover Haggadah so that we can learn what the blessings are of actually attending the ceremony in the way Yehovah intended, not just simply with the eating of communion cookies and washing of one's feet, but the whole ceremony so that we remember exactly how we were removed from Babylon and removed from Egypt and brought under his chuppah and under his tent and under his love and under his grace.
Shalom, shalom, Jerusalem. Peace be to you. When Messiah comes to take us home, may his praise be found in you. Pray for peace, Jerusalem, city of our God. Their salvation was poured out for you, the atoning of the Lord. Once your streets filled with joy, branches raised up high, shouting, blessed be the Holy One, Yeshua Tadonai. Shalom, shalom, Jerusalem. When Messiah comes to take us home, may his praise be found in you. my soul. How my heart would thrill to hear you say, Messiah has come. Oh, my brothers, hear these words. May it pierce your soul. Turn again to worship Adonai, Mashiach, you will know. Shalom, shalom, Jerusalem. Peace be to you when Messiah. His praise be found in you. Oh, shalom, shalom, Jerusalem. Peace be to you when Messiah comes to take us home. May his praise be found.